Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young, along with Lisa Mullins. It's Here and Now, and we want to get straight to news from France, where President François Hollande just spoke on national television to the people of France, confirming that four people were killed in that hostage-taking at a kosher market in Paris today, before that standoff was ended and the hostage-taker killed. Almost simultaneously, the two Charlie Hebdo massacre suspects were killed in a shootout with police north of Paris. The market gunman, who reportedly knew the Hebdo suspects, is suspected of killing a Paris policewoman yesterday. Lauren Frère has been covering all of this news for NPR from Paris. And Lauren, first, how would you say that Hollande characterized these attacks?
Well, Hollande congratulated police and security forces. He said they acted to neutralize terrorists and save human lives. He said the murderers have been, quote, put out of action. He asked the French people, he spoke to the French people directly, and he asked them to remain united. He said unity is our best weapon against anything that can divide us. He called that kosher market hostage situation an anti-Semitic attack and an awful one at that. He said these fanatics have nothing to do with the Muslim faith. And he reiterated again that all French people need to act in solidarity. And this is ahead of a huge march that's scheduled for Sunday. We're seeing many heads of state from all over the world expressing solidarity with France at this time. And many are coming in to participate in this gathering Sunday and security meetings that will be held as well. François Hollande said he will be with the French people on Sunday, and he encouraged all French people to get out in the street and participate in this march to defend freedom. Well, he ended his speech with "Long live the Republic, long live France."
Well, it would seem that President Obama here in the U.S. waited for President Hollande to finish his speech, because President Obama is now addressing this, and he is saying the U.S. stands with France, and also making comments about what unfolded this morning in Paris and outside Paris. An incredible day. You followed it. I mean, just explosions and gunshots at a warehouse near the Charles de Gaulle airport. Also explosions and gunshots near this kosher market in Paris, all of it being broadcast on television. Tell us a little more about what's been happening.
So there are two distinct security operations that have been going on all day today, and French public has been glued to their television, split screen live coverage. One situation unfolding in a small village northeast of Paris, the other in inside the city in eastern Paris. So two separate incidents, and police also balancing these two separate security operations. I can tell you a little bit about the situation northeast of the city. That's where the two brothers who are suspected of being the shooters in the Charlie Hebdo killings on Wednesday were holed up all day. They spent about 8 hours in this little printing office that they barricaded themselves in on the edge of this village. This is a village that's 25 miles outside of Paris. It's in the green countryside farmland. In fact, it's the area that you see if you've ever landed at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. It's the countryside right there. It's very close to the airport. And in fact, two of the airport runways were shut down today during the security operation. The idea being authorities just didn't want any more civilian bystanders, huge jets of passengers landing in this area with so many weapons. And so,
Lauren? We appear to have lost the signal with Lauren. We've got somebody else's there on the line, but we have lost that signal with Lauren. And again, what she was saying is that these two brothers had holed themselves up in a warehouse, but that hostage taking did end. We'll follow the story. Oh, there's Lauren. We'll follow it with her. Lauren, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
That's okay. Listen, you've been telling us about the brothers near the Charles de Gaulle airport, but also there was the shooter who was holed up in the market in Paris. There are reports that he had been arrested 8 times. He had an accomplice and a woman who now seems to be missing. Do we know, was she in the market and escaped? Do we know what happened to her?
Police initially issued two photos of suspects in that situation, a man and a woman, the suspect and his said-to-be girlfriend. Now, we know the suspect, the gunman, has been killed inside that supermarket. We don't know what's happened to the girlfriend. Authorities never specified whether she was actually inside during the seizures, whether she was simply an accomplice in preparing the attack. That's something we don't know. There are many unknowns there in that attack on the kosher market. Specifically, how many hostages were inside? Initially, we thought about five people. Now we're hearing upwards of 15 people. And as you mentioned, French President François Hollande has confirmed that four hostages were killed. We did see several people being evacuated alive from that market, but we're not sure how many people were in there in the first place.
Well, Lauren, just in the minute we have here where we are in Boston, we, of course, went through the siege of a neighborhood after the bombing. And people in that one neighborhood and others who watch that on TV have still not recovered. I can't imagine. I'm thinking that this is like two water towns, the town here in Massachusetts. This is like two water towns there in France. How are people reacting?
Well, I think Parisians are hoping that they can sort of collectively breathe a sigh of relief that after 3 days of terror attacks, hostage takings, evacuations, alerts across the French capital, they can finally feel secure that this situation is over. And as an American visiting Paris, I can tell you this is hauntingly similar to the Boston situation in that there were two brothers. They've been on the run. It brings back a lot of memories, especially as an American here. But it's a reminder that this can happen anywhere, sadly.
Lauren Frère, who's been reporting from Paris for NPR on this extraordinary day. Two hostage situations ended with the killing of three hostage takers, two brothers, and a single shooter at a market in Paris. And now we're hearing from the French president confirmation that four hostages were killed in that siege in Paris. Lauren, thanks so much for keeping us up to date.
You're welcome.
For more, now we turn to Bruce Hoffman, who's former scholar in residence at the CIA, now director of security studies at Georgetown University. Bruce, the question remains now of whether these attacks are the work of independent militants or if they might have connections to ISIS or al-Qaeda. What's the significance of the suspects' extremist ties?
Well, I think, you know, terrorism doesn't occur in a vacuum, and certainly these attacks, I think, have to be situated within the milieu of the intense rivalry between al-Qaeda and ISIS. And just in the past week or so, the latest issue of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula's internet magazine, Inspire, you know, talked about first the importance of these types of attacks and even listed the Charlie Hebdo cartoonists as number one targets. So, you know, you've got now a competition between two formidable terrorist entities, one that we thought was waning and weakening, but is certainly trying to use dramatic, daring attacks, as potentially this might be, as a way to elbow themselves back into the limelight, and then an upstart group that is trying to completely eclipse the original organization. So it becomes very worrisome.
Yeah, so you're saying, and again, we don't have evidence right now of exactly whether or not these suspects have ties to al-Qaeda or ISIS, but you're saying if they do, then you would be looking at whether or not they're part of a competition to stage the most spectacular kind of attack?
Right, which unfortunately is not new. I mean, we've seen this historically, repeatedly. In France itself, when different Palestinian groups competed against one another using Paris in many cases as a battleground. In Northern Ireland, where upstart offshoots of the Irish Republican Army competed with the parent organization. And that's the problem, is that splits or fractionalization in terrorist groups rarely result as some had hoped earlier last year when ISIS was expelled from al-Qaeda, and that perhaps these two groups would just weaken one another and therefore self-immolate, disappear. Historically, at least, what we've seen is that splits and fractionalization only launches an even more intense rivalry where the coin of the realm for these groups to gain supporters, to gain new recruits, to gain credibility is violence, is terrorist attacks. And it leads to an upsurge in terrorism, and often it's international targets that guarantee them worldwide attention.
We spoke with Clint Watts of the Foreign Policy Research Institute, who said that it's noteworthy in his view that the gunmen in the Charlie Hebdo case were not shooting randomly. It was more of a single shot with a target. Does that for you suggest, as it does for him, that these are professionals who had been trained? And what kind of observations are you making to help you figure out the genesis of this?
Well, two things. Firstly, AK-47s aren't necessarily easy to fire if you're inexperienced. The fact that, let's say, unlike the attack on the Westgate Shopping Center in Nairobi in September 2013, where there was much more uncontrolled firing and random automatic weapons fire, this, much like the 2008 Mumbai attacks, were people firing on single shot, very carefully selecting and ensuring the death of their targets. So it's certainly a discipline that one would expect comes from, you know, perhaps just a modicum, but certainly comes from training and shows a very deliberate intent. What strikes me most, and we often have very short memories when it comes to terrorism incidents, is that in September 2010, Osama bin Laden called for the replication of Mumbai-style attacks across Europe in major cities. Now, back then, the groups that might have been capable of doing so just lacked the ability to fulfill his edict. And this makes me think that perhaps, you know, bin Laden's clarion call from 4.5 years ago, that at least some groups now are ready to do so and do have the necessary skill set to implement these types of attacks.
Americans had been told by the administration that the core of al-Qaeda had been defeated. If indeed you think that there could be ties to al-Qaeda or possibly ISIS, what does that tell you about how formidable al-Qaeda may be right now, if signs lead in that direction?
Part of the problem over the past 13 or 14 years in the war on terrorism is this almost precipitous desire, perfectly understood, but often presumptuous, to declare victory before our enemies are actually defeated. You know, in my view, there have been so many developments with core al-Qaeda that have called into question whether the core has been ultimately defeated. The threat certainly in recent years has diminished, but it's a threat that hasn't completely gone away.
Thank you for speaking with us. Bruce Hoffman, former scholar in residence at the CIA. He's now director of security studies at Georgetown University. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure.
It's Here and Now, and we're continuing to follow news out of France. Three hostage takers dead after French police stormed two locations. The dead include two brothers suspected in the massacre this week at the offices of the magazine Charlie Hebdo. They had at the magazine before the attack this week had pledged to uphold their right to publish satirical, often scatological and vulgar cartoons about all religions, including the Muslim faith. We want to bring in Jutta Klassen. She's professor of international cooperation and politics at Brandeis University. She's also author of The Cartoons That Shook the World, about the Danish cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad and the protests that followed that. Professor, welcome back, because we spoke to you then. Just your first observation on this day. What are you thinking? What do you think is important to think about?
Well, I think many of us who have been watching these situations unfold again and again had a nauseating feeling of familiarity, not just because there were two brothers involved and we ended up seeing Paris under siege, but also because the attacks follow the blueprints of planned but fortunately averted attacks on the editorial offices of the Danish newspaper Jyllands-Posten, which, as Clint Watt said earlier on your program, had been ordered directly by Osama bin Laden. Mm. They're now, it has been reported that U.S. officials have said that, in fact, Said Kouachi, the older of the brothers, had a meeting in 2011 with Anwar al-Awlaki, the leader of the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. And we have a good number of indications that this was something that had been planned for some time.
Well, and his brother, Amadi Koulibaly, was convicted in 2010 of a plot to free a convicted terrorist from prison. So you are seeing, this isn't perhaps lone wolf, but you're seeing direct connections. And what does that mean to you?
That is what we would expect. This is a very professional type of attack. And generally speaking, in those cases, there are often multiple attacks. There's always this pattern of doing multiple things at the same time. What is surprising is that the younger of the two brothers, Sherif Kouachi, was actually first arrested all the way back in 2005 in connection with a very large recruitment ring based in Paris to send French youth to fight in the first Iraqi insurgency for al-Qaeda in Iraq, which really lasted from 2005 to 2007. And so they grow out of a very long-lasting extremist milieu in Paris.
And I want to correct myself. You're talking about the Kouachi brothers,
yes,
who were behind, or suspected to be behind, the attack on the magazine. Amadi Koulibaly,
yeah,
is the man that is believed to have been the shooter of a policewoman yesterday and the hostage taker in the second situation. And it's believed that there are ties between them. And he was convicted of trying to free a convicted terrorist from prison. You're saying this doesn't surprise you, that there might be these simultaneous acts?
No, it does not surprise me. There's some conflicting information about who exactly has been involved in what. Kouliabi was also reported earlier today to have been arrested as many times as 8 times on minor crime, and is reported to have met some of the very important French terrorists who were responsible for the 1995 Metro bombings while in prison.
Well, then the question, we just have a few seconds and we could take it up again later, but why aren't they being watched more closely?
They were watched,
yeah,
but the reality is that there are an urgent need to ration police resources right now because there's simply too many people who pose risks.
And that is a frightening answer. Jutta Clausen, professor at Brandeis University, her book is The Cartoons That Shook the World. Thanks as always.